Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story, the Chinese Communist Party ousts 9 top generals, including its number 2 general, ahead of a key meeting. What does the leadership shakeup say about party leader Xi Jinping's grip on power, and could it affect Beijing's ability to take Taiwan? President Trump says his 100% tariffs on China would not be sustainable, and that Beijing's rare earth export curbs forced him to do so. Major American tech firms are racing to move production out of China as trade tensions escalate between the two nations. We bring you the details. The U.S. and Australia are teaming up to operate a facility that produces missiles on Australian soil, strengthening regional defense in the Indo-Pacific. A major shakeup in China's military. On Friday, Beijing ousted its number 2 general and the army's top political officer, along with 7 other high-ranking generals. The purge raises questions about whether this could impact China's ability to take Taiwan. It comes just days before top Chinese Communist Party leaders meet in Beijing. The highest-ranking official among the 9 generals, He Weidong, is China's number 2 military leader, directly under CCP leader Xi Jinping. He's seen as a close ally of Xi Jinping and Xi's choice to lead a potential invasion of Taiwan. He Weidong sat on China's 24-member Politburo, the second highest body of power in the Chinese Communist Party. He hasn't appeared in public since March. China's defense ministry says He and several others seriously violated party discipline and are suspected of major financial crimes. Another expelled official, Miao Hua, is the army's top political officer. He was already under investigation last year. Miao is familiar with military affairs related to Taiwan and the South China Sea. The U.S. considers these two regions the most likely spots for a conflict with China. He is also seen as close to Xi Jinping's inner circle. Another purge general, Lin Xiangyang, was in charge of the theater that would play a central role in any conflict over Taiwan. The Chinese Communist Party sees Taiwan as part of China despite never having ruled it. Beijing's vow to take it under control by force if necessary. The recent developments have sparked speculation that Xi Jinping may be losing power. The announcement came just days before a key meeting that will gather the CCP's most senior officials in Beijing next week. And what does the military purge signal ahead of the CCP's key meeting, the fourth plenum? Given the plenum is where the party's top brass decide who holds power and sets the country's direction, what are analysts watching for this year with the recent trade escalations abroad and political purges inside the country? We spoke with Jacqueline Deal, president and CEO of defense research firm Long-Term Strategy Group and advisory board member of State Armor, for insights. Jackie Deal, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Tiffany. Great to be with you.
Now, a big development out of China. Many are calling this a dramatic move for the Chinese Communist Party. It just expelled 9 high-ranking military officials, one of which was seen as a very close political ally of Xi Jinping. Now, this does come just days ahead of that fourth plenum meeting that many people are watching. How are you reading this in conjunction with the fourth plenum? What is this signaling?
It brings to mind, I guess, a number of thoughts. One, the striking, eye-watering levels of investment in the PLA over the last decade and a half, 2 decades, but really escalating and accelerating under Xi Jinping, clearly created opportunities for grift and corruption. But this seems as if it's more than that. This is not just about corruption, it's about power. And then you have to ask questions. Is Xi dissatisfied because he doesn't think that these people are up to the task of leading the military in the struggles that he is anticipating or the war that he may be planning to start? Does he like to keep the situation in kind of perennial turmoil as a way of bolstering his own power? Is he sensing conspiracy mounting against him, plots from below? Are there concerns that are driving this that have to do with his own insecurity? There's so much we don't know. It's humbling, but we have to kind of prepare ourselves for a wide band of outcomes at this point.
I do want to dig into this a bit because we have been seeing, say, a lot of headlines or, if you want, rumors online about Xi Jinping and his grip or lack thereof on power, especially when you do see some of his, what we're seeing as proteges or close allies getting purged. Is that a message that he is in power or that he isn't? With this latest batch of firings or expelled, if you will, how does that reflect on him? Because there were some questions of this fourth plenum, if he would step down potentially. How are you reading this?
Yes, and there are rumors actually now ongoing that perhaps he's already been kind of deposed in a soft way and succeeded by a consortium of other leaders. I think we can't know from the outside. Ought to go on our, you know, the fact that he may be poised to meet with President Trump on the sidelines of APEC later this month. So it's tough to say what's really going on behind the scenes. But in the face of certainty and the wide range of potential outcomes, I think one thing to remind ourselves as Americans is our default tendency is to try to want to ensure stability and reimpose stability when it looks as if we're facing a crisis anywhere in the world. In this particular instance, we are dealing with Xi Jinping having effectively declared economic war on the world, on the United States, but also on the world just in the last few weeks with his escalation of export controls on rare earths. You know, the Treasury Secretary of the United States recently said, make no mistake, this is China against the world. And that's a new position for the Chinese Communist Party to have put itself in such a frontal way. It's unprecedented for a US Treasury Secretary to speak in those terms. And so there must be people in Beijing or in Zhongnanhai who are wondering, have we played our hand wisely? Or is it possible that there are recriminations and that Xi is under pressure to demonstrate that he has, you know, steered the Chinese ship of state wisely? It may be that the kind of leverage that they've accrued by pursuing their supply chain dominant strategy is the kind of leverage that you can only have if you don't use it, if you can kind of keep it latent. And the minute that you start post kind of very frontal direct threats, you risk losing it.
Well, definitely a lot to watch out for. Jackie Deal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tiffany.
President Trump said on Friday his proposed 100% tariffs on Chinese goods would not be sustainable. He added that China forced him to do so. Chinese authorities tightened control over rare earth exports earlier this month. Here's what Trump said in an interview with Fox Business.
If you put that 100% tariff on top of what's in place already, you're at 157% tariff on China. Can that stand?
No.
What is that going to do to the economy?
It's not sustainable, but that's what the number is. It's probably not, you know, it could stand. But they forced me to do that. I think we're going to do fine with China.
Trump unveiled additional tariffs of 100% on Chinese imports a week ago. He was reacting to China dramatically expanding its export controls on rare earth minerals. Trump also confirmed he'll meet with Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping in South Korea in 2 weeks.
Three New York City mayoral candidates faced off on the debate stage for the first time Thursday night. NTD's Flora Hua spoke with some New Yorkers who shared their preferred candidates and their biggest concerns in this election. Many said they reject socialism coming into the Big Apple. Others pointed to China, using it as an example of how people can't thrive under communism or socialism. Let's take a closer look.
Probably vote for Cuomo just because he's had more experience, but I don't agree with all his policies, but I definitely don't agree with Madami at all. Yeah, I think he's, I just think he's a socialist. But I still think people have to like work for a living. You know, I don't think anything is free. That's, you know, that's why we're successful here. Capitalism works, socialism doesn't. So, you know.
I mean, I'm leaning towards Cuomo because he has the most amount of experience.
What I'm doing is I'm telling Republican voters in the state of New York, in the city of New York, to vote against Mamdani for Andrew Cuomo. And if Zohran Mamdani is successful here, they will replicate that playbook in every major Democrat-run city. That's why this race is so important to send a national message that we do not accept communism in the United States of America. This is a Judeo-Christian capitalist society and country. and we must protect it with all that we have.
You can't be an entrepreneur, you can't come up with new ideas, you can't thrive in a socialist or communist environment. I have my own business. I started my own business with $50. I grew it to a multi-million dollar enterprise. I've helped employ a lot of people and have them earn a good living. That's capitalism. In a communistic or a socialistic state, that doesn't exist. We will never know what is exactly happening in China because the government controls the media. There is no free speech in any communist country.
As trade tensions between the U.S. and China heat up, some American tech giants are quietly shifting production. According to a Nikkei report Thursday, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are all moving parts of their operations and supply chains out of China. Microsoft in particular wants up to 80% of the components for its Surface devices and data centers made elsewhere by 2026. The company is already asking its partners to start preparing for that move next year. Meanwhile, Amazon is reportedly looking to buy fewer components for its AI data centers from its longtime Chinese supplier, SYE. And Google is ramping up server production in Thailand after securing partners for parts needed for assembly. All this comes just a week after President Trump announced new export controls on what he calls any and all critical software starting next month. The decision follows escalating trade tensions between Washington and Beijing over China's restrictions on rare earth exports. The U.S. and Australia are taking a major step forward in their defense partnership to produce missiles. A new facility in Australia is set to open by the end of the year. It's aimed at producing roughly 4,000 missiles annually. The move is marking a big shift towards self-reliance in the Indo-Pacific. It's part of Australia's $21 billion plan to build a missile program. The facility will be operated through a partnership between the U.S. Department of War, Australia, and major U.S. weapons manufacturer Lockheed Martin. These guide rocket systems and precision strike missiles are able to hit targets more than 300 miles away. Australia's Defense Minister Pat Conroy said the goal is to integrate Australian-made weapons into U.S. global supply chains. A second facility will begin producing missiles starting in 2027. The U.S., Australia, and Lockheed Martin have opened an office in Alabama aimed at deepening cooperation and improved coordination across the Pacific. The announcement comes just days before Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's trip to the U.S. to meet with President Trump on Monday. Now to the war in Ukraine. President Donald Trump welcomes Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House for their fourth face-to-face meeting this year. The leaders were proposing a weapon swap and leveraging momentum from the Gaza ceasefire to advance peace efforts in Ukraine. Here's more.
After their visit in the cabinet meeting, in the cabinet room today, President Trump is calling for an immediate end to the war in Ukraine, saying that if it ends along its current lines, both Russia and Ukraine can declare victory. President Trump and President Zelensky are saying that this meeting is different than the others because it comes on the heels of the Gaza ceasefire. Take a look.
Do you think you can carry the momentum from the Middle East deal over to this deal?
And I do.
How does that move the needle?
Yeah, I do. I think we carry a lot of momentum, a lot of credibility. Getting Middle East done was very important.
Congratulations with your successful ceasefire in the Middle East. And I think this is a momentum to finish Russia's war against Ukraine.
President Zelensky proposes that Ukraine would provide the U.S. with its advanced drones in exchange for the U.S.'s long-range Tomahawk missiles. The atmosphere of the meeting, this time in the cabinet room, notably different from when the two leaders were in the Oval in February.
And I think he looks beautiful in his jacket.
Yeah?
It's beautiful. I hope people notice. It's actually very stylish. I like it.
In recent days, President Trump has said he's open to selling Ukraine the Tomahawks, but after Thursday's call with President Putin, he softens his posture.
Would much rather have them not need Tomahawks. Would much rather have the war be over.
President Trump says he's expecting to meet Putin in Budapest, Hungary.
It's a country that's a safe country that will be going to be with Viktor Orban, and he'll be a very good host.
And that the meeting format is to be determined, but
it'll be a double meeting, but we will have the president, Zelensky, in touch. There's a lot of bad blood with the two presidents.
Coming up, two serious warnings in a week against China. The UK intelligence agency has labeled China a hostile state. A Sydney court agreeing to delay the case of an ultra-wealthy Chinese woman. The car accident she's involved in is sparking unusual media and public attention. Many are speculating, who is she connected to and where is her wealth from?
But it shows how much money the Chinese or the communist leadership has been getting out of mainland China to position itself for times when they're not in power.
More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. The UK says it's facing escalating threats from hostile states such as China, Iran, and Russia. The head of Britain's domestic intelligence agency, MI5, issued another warning on Thursday, the second one this week.
When it comes to China, the UK needs to defend itself resolutely against threats and seize the opportunities that demonstrably serve our nation.
He added that China is guilty of cyber espionage and luring academics to China. The head of the agency also said China is interfering in UK public life and harassing pro-democracy dissidents in Britain. His statements come just 2 days after MI5 warned that the country's politicians are being targeted by agents from China. Russia and Iran, UK lawmakers are being warned of attempts to gain information through phishing attacks, blackmail, and the cultivation of long-term personal relationships.
Now we turn to the court case of the mysterious wealthy Chinese woman Yang Lanlan. On Friday, a Sydney court has agreed to delay her case to mid-November at the request of her lawyer. Yang may face another charge. The 23-year-old has sparked a social media frenzy in China after a car accident. Many have been asking, who is she, where does her wealth come from, and who is she connected to? Yang slammed a $1.5 million Rolls Royce into a Mercedes van in July. The Mercedes driver was the personal driver of an Australian celebrity, and he was seriously injured. Yang walked away unharmed. She is now facing charges, including causing bodily harm by dangerous driving and refusing a roadside breath test. As a 23-year-old, Yang owns two Rolls Royces and lives in a luxury penthouse in Sydney's East. No photos and business records of her could be found online. Some internet users started suspecting that she's connected to high-ranking Chinese Communist Party officials. Here's how Yang's defense lawyer responded to that. Take a listen.
You never asked whether she's linked with the Chinese Communist Party?
Is she aware of all the online speculation about her identity and you?
She's a very shy girl, but I'm assuming she reads and looks at media from time to time.
We spoke to Gregory Copley, president of the International Strategic Studies Association, for his take on the case.
My automatic conclusion from watching that and seeing the progression of this case is the same as that of most of the observers in the People's Republic of China itself, who see this as part of an enormous corruption network around the Chinese leadership. And clearly, this young lady is connected to the leadership, and that possibly means Xi Jinping himself, almost certainly, to some degree, and others. There's apparently some linkage there between that and other recent events and killings in the mainland China. So this is really setting off alarm bells, even when people aren't sure of all of the exact details. But the rumors of exactly how much money this young lady controls in Australia, it could be up to $270 billion of resources, which part of which could be explained as the proceeds of middleman cuts, if you like, on the export of Australian iron ore to China. But it's obviously clearly more than that if it's to reach that sort of money. But it shows how much money the Chinese or the communist leadership has been getting out of mainland China to position itself for times when they're not in power. And I think this is part of the whole concern with the CCP elders in keeping Xi Jinping from fleeing the country. Certainly they didn't want him going to Pyongyang, where he could have elected to stay, or to go to Seoul for the APEC summit and then going on to somewhere else from there. and there was the original plan, which was thwarted, that he would go to Kazakhstan through Xinjiang province, and that was thwarted. So there's some concern that Xi, if he could, would flee. There's the other thought that Xi couldn't go to those Seoul and Pyongyang gatherings, simply because if he did, he would miss out on fighting his last-ditch battle, literally the survival battle in Beijing.
Copley said the corruption, which is highly evident in Yang's case and others worldwide, is tightening the net around Xi Jinping in Beijing. India sending mixed messages on Russian oil. President Trump announced on Wednesday that India's Prime Minister Modi promised to stop buying oil from Russia during a phone call. But India's foreign ministry said the next day it wasn't aware of any call between the two leaders. NTD's international correspondent Aryan Pasdar has the latest.
I am not aware of any conversation yesterday between the two leaders.
Russia is also weighing in on Trump's comments.
We rely upon the official statement issued by the India's foreign ministry. These statements are available to everyone, therefore we rely upon them.
And Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says the U.S. hopes that Japan will also stop buying oil from Russia. Bessent met with Japan's finance minister, saying they discussed the administration's expectation that Japan stop importing Russian energy. The U.S. says those countries should stop making business with Russia because Moscow uses the money to finance the war in Ukraine. Aryan Pasdar, NTD News.
President Trump didn't say when his call with Prime Minister Modi took place. An India spokesperson only mentioned a possible call this Wednesday. According to the data, India imported about 1.6 million barrels of Russian oil per day in September. That number rose to around 1.8 million in October. There's been no sign of a slowdown so far. That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For on-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you soon.